Losanner Bewegung Deutschland. Koalition für Evangelisation.
It helps a bit with some of what you were sharing and what you guys were talking about, the burden that we feel sometimes of how do we go and share the gospel, and we must, you know, we feel that thing, we must go and do something. What helps me is, on one hand, when I look at the spiritual hunger and I look at the lies, it does something in my heart. It makes me see people outside through a different light. So rather than I have to go and tell them, because, you know, it's the project, it's the strategy, it's that burden that you get from God for how they're feeling. And so when I go out, I often need to remind myself things like the lyrics from the Bring Me the Horizon band that I showed. Like, I go out and I'm having a conversation with somebody, and I remember, and on the surface they might seem fine, and maybe I think they don't want to talk, but I know that often behind the scenes there is brokenness, there is spiritual hunger, there is a searching. And I think at the same time, it's an encouragement to recognize that God is on the move. The more we go out, the more opportunity people will have to respond. And very often I think that it's the distance that's the problem. And maybe that's what I want to emphasize in this session. Evangelism and reaching the next generation in secular culture doesn't need to be as complicated as we sometimes make it, or as difficult. It's often just about reducing the distance. If we're most of the time in our own circle, and we don't strategically find ways to go and be there where people are, then it doesn't happen. But we find often when we go and we're there, we're present, it flows more than we expected. We work with local churches all around Europe, where we talk about this, and then we say, now let's go out and do something together. And at first everybody's nervous about that, or they don't turn up for the event because they know that we're going to go and do street evangelism, and they're like, I'm not going to do that. But when they do, when they take the step of faith and say, let's go and try and connect, they often come home to us saying, man, that was way easier than I expected. It was very cool. I enjoyed it. It was fun. I had a great conversation. So maybe if you forget everything else, maybe one important thing is we need to reduce the distance between the church and secular culture. We need to just find creative ways to connect and be there present. Maybe one story just to exemplify, I told you about the band in the festival. Well, for me, the favorite moment are often the one-on-one conversations after doing an impact thing and saying something. But the last time we were there, June last year, I remember one guy coming up to me afterwards and having a conversation, and he wanted to tell me about his ideas, you know. So he said, well, it's great you're talking about God and all this stuff. I believe in God as well, but I believe that God is between all the atoms, and you just have to experience that, and, you know, and I don't think that there's anything more, and I don't think you need to talk about Christianity or Jesus and all these kind of things. And I listened to it, and I said, wow, that's really interesting. And I said, I just want to challenge you on one thing, to think about how you're such a beautiful, complex person. You're so much more than just the atoms and the energy. So maybe the person who made you is so much more than that as well. And he thought about it, and I said, God, just pray for you. I just want to pray for you right now. Is there anything I can pray for you? And he said, yeah, sure, go for it. Pray for me. And I pray for him. And as I prayed, I felt God's heart for him. And when I opened my eyes, we were both in tears. And there was a moment where God was speaking to his heart. And when I finished, he said, hold on a second, that he called his girlfriend on the phone. And then he said to his girlfriend, this guy's just been telling me about God. Please tell my girlfriend what you just told me about God. So then I'm on a Zoom call or whatever he used, you know, a FaceTime video, trying to explain to his girlfriend what I explained to him. But that story just hit me that often at the beginning of a conversation, you can feel like, oh, it's too complicated. They don't want to know. There's too many things. And then suddenly God moves in a way through the conversation, and he's already inviting his girlfriend to hear as well. And this happens over and over again when we reduce the distance and we go out. So here's a prayer that we've been praying for some time.
that God would raise up a missionary movement around Europe and around the world that would reach a secular youth culture, that would reach people who wouldn't usually walk into a church. And we're encouraged because in the same way that we hear of the quiet revivals and of the people turning up in churches who would never be before, another thing that we're observing is a wildfire of people going out and boldly sharing the gospel, young people reaching their generation. There is a greater hunger in churches today, young people, to go out and share the gospel with their friends than I've ever seen before. I was just sharing with somebody before who's spent years in Russia. I said, we've got teams all across Russia. There's a Telegram group with over 3,000 youngest evangelists sharing every week on Telegram the stories of them going out on the streets and meeting people or going to universities and sharing the gospel. It's happening everywhere, every week, sharing the gospel. This is in Norway, going out on the streets, sharing the gospel with youth for creativity, doing protests across cities in Europe, protests against the lies in secular culture. This one is in Dresden, here in Germany. You know, often Germans tell me, oh, Dresden is a very atheistic city. It is, but when you go into the middle of the square of Dresden and jump out of a coffin and start talking about Jesus, which is not new, right? William Booth did that many, many years ago. And yet you see people responding and open to hear the gospel. We're in Lisbon in Portugal, where we go and have amazing conversations. And it is about provoking and be creative and talking about Jesus in a different way. But it's also about the one-on-one conversations and relationships. It's connecting with people and hearing their hearts and responding to the questions they're asking. It's inviting people into community, into discipleship, into walking together, which I know many of you guys talked about in the groups. We've seen in our own work that we're doing with the mission list growing, we run a mission school just outside Dresden that has started to attract, nowadays we have around 150 young adults, young people from all around the world coming and getting trained in a very practical way to find creative ways to share the gospel in secular culture. And then they're spreading and starting teams in cities all around the world. And I want to share with you the basic principles that we teach these teams in cities around the world to bridge the gap between the church and secular culture. And I wanted to start by just sharing a verse, a passage again, that's been important for me in thinking about this. And it's that one in Matthew 9, verse 35 to 38. This passage became important from the end of last year for me. There was a moment where we were meeting with our mission team and strategizing, as we all do with our churches and ministries. You know, what's the plan for next year? What's the strategy? And we were trying to come up with good ways of reaching people around the world. And the evening before, the night before, when we were finalizing our plans, I had a dream. I don't usually hear God in dreams or talk about my dreams. My wife does that more than me. But that day, something very important. God spoke to me in an important way through a dream. So I was with our team, and we were in a very dark part of the city, a very broken part of the city, and we were trying to find somewhere to eat. And we were going around looking. I went into a restaurant, and there were some kids, and they were messing about in the restaurant and causing trouble. And I was getting angry in the dream. I was getting angry with them. And I told them, you guys get out of here. And I took one of them out, and it was a little kid. And I took him out, and I said, you should go home. You're messing about. Go home. And at that moment, a girl came to me, and she said, this kid, he doesn't have a home. And at that moment, it just hit me. Something really, like a bird, really hit me of a sense of not having a home. And when I woke up, I was confused. I was like, man, I don't work with kids. I work with, you know, young adults and university students. But I felt like God was saying to me that this generation we're talking about, they don't have a home anymore. And if we don't start with a burden and a broken heart for people outside, that then it's very hard to talk about strategy. And so I felt like God was reminding us as a mission, don't get big into all the strategies. Get a broken heart. And it was this verse in Matthew 9 that really hit me. Verse 35 onwards, Jesus went through the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and illness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into the harvest field." You know, it's a verse we all know so well, but what I want to remember about this is, first of all, it comes out of Jesus going to all the towns and all the places and connecting with people. Maybe one of the biggest things Jesus did in his ministry was reduce the distance between himself and people. He went out to meet them and to connect with them. And I think that's our call as a church today. How can we reduce the distance between us and secular culture and us and the younger generation? And when Jesus goes out and he does that, it says that he had compassion on them. And we're reminded of a God that is not only all-powerful and who has a plan and who can move when we go out with the strategies, but it is a God who has a heart that is broken, right? He feels the pain when he looks at the crowd, when he looks at our generation today. His heart is broken for those. And if I forget that, then I'll miss it. I'll miss how to actually do something today in our generation. I have to ask God again for his broken heart, for that compassion that he felt, where he could look at the crowd, at the audience, at the people, and say they were harassed, they were helpless, and they were like sheep without a shepherd. And those are important things because sometimes we look at the world around us and we see people as the enemy. It's us versus them. Or we see them as apathetic and they don't want to know, and so best to just leave them alone. But if we are reminded that they are harassed, they are attacked by lies of a culture that has taught them that they've been brought in, that has kept them distant from God. If we remember that they're in some ways victims of that as well. You know, so we're sinners, but we're victims of our own sin. And so they're helpless and they're like sheep without a shepherd. They are kids with no home. They are people. Now, I'm talking about adults here. I'm talking about people who think they have everything they need and they don't need anything. They don't have a home. They are like sheep without a shepherd. They need us to go to them. And Jesus' response to it is two things. Pray for workers, for the harvest. And he says, pray that the Lord of the harvest would give workers. So we pray today for a missionary movement to reach this generation, to reach the secular culture. That is prayer. We need to pray as churches across Europe, across Germany. We need to pray, God, would you raise up missionaries for this secular culture today? And the second thing that goes on into chapter 10 is to go. And Jesus has that heart and burden for the lost and for the harvest, and he goes himself. But in chapter 10, he sends them out. He sends them out, and it says in that chapter, I'll remind you a few of the famous parts of that chapter, he sends them as sheep among wolves. He sends them to preach from the rooftops. He sends them to go out without a bag, without an extra cloak. He sends them out as missionaries. And it's this powerful sending that maybe we've often forgotten as well as a church, the sending. So I want to tell you from that three things that I think are really important for a missionary movement to happen. First of all, I think we need to send our young people, because the best people to reach this generation are going to be the young ones themselves. It's a young missionary will send out to reach their generation. So how can we send young people to go and reach those who are spiritually hungry today? How can we fill places like Polish Woodstock Festival with young missionaries? How can we fill our universities with young missionaries? Are we thinking as churches how to send young people to get involved, how to encourage them, how to empower them into going? And part of that's going to be training. And too much of our training, I think, has become very academic or theoretical. And there's nothing wrong with academia. We need the weight of academia. But when you look at Jesus, what he did in that chapter 10, is it was very practical, right? Go, and here's what you do, and go and do it. We need more practical trainings for our young people, things that really engage them in the action. Let's go and do something together. That's practical training. And the third thing is that it would be evangelistic focus. And we lose that so quickly, the focus on the sharing of the gospel. I think that's one of the heart of gathering in the Lausanne. That's always been part of the Lausanne vision, is to emphasize that it's this preaching of the gospel we need. And the reality is, and we all know this, but the natural tendency is to drift away from evangelism. You could start strong as a church or a ministry or a mission to share the gospel, and because it's outside our comfort zone, we always naturally drift from it. So we've got to keep bringing it back in tension. We've got to keep making it the focus again. So I believe for a new missionary movement, we need to pray for, we need to send our young people, we need to give them very practical training, and we need to make it evangelistic focused. And so I want to show you a video of one of our teams in a European city center. I think this one was in Oslo, if I'm not mistaken. And just an example of encouraging them to find creative ways to provoke, to share the gospel in a way that's creative, and to do it together, and to make evangelism fun and something that they can get behind. So,
thanks. Sam, okay, and then sitting here.
What's up, guys? We're out here on the streets for a bold, creative street action, and I want to share some creative tools with you that we use with Steiger to talk to people on the streets. These tools are like icebreakers. They're a way getting into conversation with someone a little bit more easily and being able to share the gospel with them. And the first tool that we use is right here behind me. It's a tool that we call What Are You Living For? So right now we have some plastic wrap that's wrapped around a bunch of trees here on this square. And we spray painted this question on it. What are you living for? And then you approach people on the street and you ask them to participate in this project. You say, we're doing this project here on the streets where we ask people this specific question. Would you like to participate? And write down your answer with this marker. And they can write down the answer on the plastic wrap. This way you get a bunch of answers. It's really cool to read. And it's a way to get into a conversation about this topic. In this case, talking about what are you living for, what's the purpose, what is the goal of your life, you know, and you can get to a conversation about, is that fulfilling you, is this something that's worth, you know, living for? And then you can introduce the gospel to them and introduce Jesus. And for extra effect, we've used some UV lights and some neon paint here. Really makes the colors pop, so if you have that available, that's really, really cool, and really draws a lot of attention. So would encourage you to do this in your city.
So as we be praying for missionary movement, I get excited seeing groups of young people like this doing creative things in cities all around the world that are engaging with the kind of questions people are asking, bringing creativity but boldness. So it's relevance and boldness combined together. It's saying, let's really connect us, be close to people, let's be where they are, and let's share the gospel boldly. And it's simple, right? It's like it's something anybody can do. When our mission started, we started touring with a band called No Longer Music that many in Germany heard of, especially from a former generation. I'll get people walking up to me saying, I was at a No Longer Music concert when I was at a university. And actually, that performance still goes today. We still go around the world sharing the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus in a crazy way with a performance. But we also realize that we've got to make it easy for anybody to join in. And very often people come up to us and say, oh, that performance is amazing, but I could never do something like that. And so we thought, well, we're going to have something that our churches and our young people all over the world can do. And so we've been putting together different creative ideas of how to share the gospel with this generation. And I'll share with you three things that we teach our teams. And you might have noticed, I said before, we've got these teams spread all around the world. We have teams in the Middle East, in South America, across Europe and Eurasia. And the training we give is very practical. It's very hands-on. And we basically teach these three things. And it's not new. It's the same concepts that we've always had in missions. To start with, go get to know the scene in your city. Go listen to people. Go to the places where they are. Go and connect with them. Get to know the lies in the global youth culture. Get to know the scene. Second thing, speak truth into thy secularity. Ask God for bold, creative, provocative ways to bring the gospel into whatever scene it is God is calling you to. And I heard different examples of ministries in the realm of Forks or we're going for Marcus as well, and amazing work that they're doing.
or arts and music, or people more in the academic world? What is the sea that you're connecting with, and how do you bring the truths of the gospel in a bold and creative way? And lastly, making disciples. The big response to many of those lies is community and discipleship. So we're teaching our teams how to start discipleship from the very simple, the very first connection with people when they go out. And so breaking it down, we say, have a missional team in your city. And these guys are often there from many different churches, and they're meeting and praying for their cities every week, and they're going out doing some street evangelism, or they're putting together an event, and they're finding ways to be missionaries in their cities to reach secular culture. So we teach them to do those three things like this. We say, hey, go and build some relationships. Go and ask good questions in the secular scene. Go and build partnerships in the secular scene. We have teams organizing music concerts with non-Christian bands, or going into universities and inviting different groups together to partner to really get to know and connect with the sea. And then we're saying, well, find those creative ways of speaking the truth. Be bold. Point people to Jesus. Preach the message of the cross. I mean, these are obvious things, but we've often found that around the world, as a church or as missions and industries, we fall into one extreme or the other. Sometimes we're really the hip ministry, the cool ministry, and we're relevant and we're connecting with people, but we're forgetting our message and we're not preaching the truth anymore, or being clear and bold and showing people who Jesus is. And a lot of times, we're very bold. We're guys with the megaphones on the corner doing street evangelism that way, you know, and preaching a loud and clear message, but we're not connecting with people's hearts anymore. We're not hearing their questions. And so we teach the teams, get to know the scene and speak true into the scene. And lastly, we grade it now with the discipleship. And we say, guys, discipleship starts where you are. And it starts where you meet somebody new. It doesn't start when they come into your church. When you go out into the festival or the streets or to a club and you meet somebody, that's when discipleship starts. And we're teaching young missionaries, young people, how to engage one-on-one relationally, and then how to open up a community space that is maybe a step before going into a church. We start Bible studies for the non-religious or community houses and things like that. So you end up with a team in a city doing lots of different activities. Part of it is just getting to know the culture and city. It's going and getting rid of the distance between the church and secular culture. It's going out to that. Some of it's very evangelistic and bold. Some of it's discipleship and inviting people into community. And the combination of that, all of which is not you, but is teaching a young missionary movement to do that well and have it well rooted in the local church that we've seen spread as a wildfire and start things that are bringing actions. And I'll end by giving you a couple of examples of that. This is Michael from Oslo in Norway. He was 22 when he came to our mission school just outside Dresden. And he got a heart for his city, and he said, I want a missionary team in Oslo. I want to start something. And he got back to his home, and he really liked the ideas that we were talking about, protesting against the lies of secular culture. So he called me one day, and he said, I've decided I'm going to organize a protest going through the street of Oslo, and I'm going to stop in front of the parliament building, and I'm going to preach. And I said, wow, that's crazy. He calls. And I said, go for it, right? Because you know, that's what you got to say. When a young person says, I'm going to walk through the cities, and I'm going to preach in front of parliament building, what do you say? You say, go for it. Let's go. I'll pray for you. I've got to pray for you. So he gathered people from 9 different churches, then put together banners and signs, and they walked through the city, and they connected with people and preached. Well, the next time he decided he'd be a bit more creative, but he'd think about more things. And so he decided he would get one of his team members and put chains all over them and put VR goggles on their face. He said, now walk through the city center. We will have this kind of weird, dark music playing. And then we're going to talk to people about, I'll be really free. And then the next time, he gathered some people from the graffiti scene and he said, let's stop in front of the central station in Oslo and do graffiti installations that talk about human value and where does human value come from. And so then he started making a lot of new connections and relationships. So he started one of our Bible studies, so they're not religious. And you might say, well, why'd you call it that? Well, it's because when we're on the street talking to people, they say, oh, that's nice, you're a Christian, but I'm not religious. And so we say, that's amazing. We have a Bible study for people like you. And many of them come. So Michael has Bible study, meaning in pubs and clubs every week with agnostics and atheists and people who have never walked into a church, but a way to sit and have a spiritual conversation and are curious to know what the Bible says. So it's an open conversation where they engage. In fact, last time I was there, I asked Michael to come with me to go speak in a YWAM base. And he said, oh, but I have the Bible study tonight. And I said, oh, yeah, then maybe you should go do that. He said, no, don't worry. I'm going to call my friend. He's not a Christian yet, but he's really good at leading the discussions. He's going to lead it. So Michael came with me to the YWAM base while a group of atheists and agnostics with no Christians present read the Bible and had a discussion together. And I will seek that. They're quick at the church because they're going into churches and saying, let's go do something. And they lean the young people out and they can enter in the church as a praying folk. The second example I want to give is closer to home. This is in Wrocław and Breslau in Poland. This is our team and they've been going for many years now. They also do crazy street evangelism and they go out for Halloween. But they also go into cultural centers and organize events with different artists and bands and they connect with the scene. They're getting to know the cultural scene of the city. Or they go and do events in music clubs with DJs or with film discussions. And then they're bold and they share the gospel in those places. And they had a Bible study that runs in the area where all the university students meet. And they run a Bible study in that place. That led to a need for opening up community. And so we started a community house and we ended up with two. And these are places where people who are not ready to walk into a church, they can come for a meal and they can sit and they can have relationships and they have community. And it responds to all of the lies of loneliness and anxiety people experience. So they were doing this Bible study. And one day these two guys came along. And there's Michael, this guy here. And he came into the Bible study and he said, I was really curious. Somebody told me to come here and I've never read the Bible before. So I was very curious to come and see what it's about. We said, oh, that's great. And then this girl, she's from our team. Her name's Bogdana. She's Ukrainian. And she came up to him and she said, oh, it's cool you guys are here. Where are you from? And he goes, oh, I'm from Russia. And in Poland, we have this often, this situation where it's awkward and it's difficult. And for some young people, it's all good. For others, that's hard. It's like, you know, when they meet somebody from an opposite side in the war. Well, Bogdana, when she heard that, she opened up a big smile. And she said, I'm so glad you're here. This weekend, we have a meal in our house. And I want to invite you to come to be part of that meal. And so on that weekend, when all the Polish people went to their families' homes because it was Easter, all the Belarusians, Russians, and Ukrainians gathered around a meal. And one of the guys gave this testimony and talked about the Last Supper. And he decided, I think, try to do some kind of Last Supper. They were talking about what is happened to Paul or Jesus. So we're seeing a missionary group of young people who are getting involved and then empowered, full of passion to go share their gospel. They're being encouraged to go out, they're being sent out. They need to be trained practically, even very practical things of how you go and engage with the culture around you, how you share the gospel, and we're seeing fruitfulness from it. And I'll end with a fun story. This is a picture of the Breslau at the end of the Second World War, and I wanted to share this with you guys because there's something about, you know, the mode we're at in the history, 80 years after the Second World War, where we get to reflect and think about what is God doing right now to reach a new generation. This house is the bony house that's been standing at the end of the war in that neighborhood, and it looks like this today. The local council and government renovated it. And my wife and I drive by this house every day now for 9 years, and we got to start putting a prayer on our hearts for this house. And we felt like it was supposed to become a mission center, a mission hub to train young people for Poland and for all of Europe. And we started praying this prayer. And we went and met the owner. It didn't work out very well, and we thought maybe the timing's not right. And we put it on the shelf, and we kept praying for 3 years. And after 3 years, a woman called us and she said, my name's Eva, I'm Polish, I'm a missionary in South Africa, and I came to Jesus through your ministry in the 90s, through the mission of Sire in the 90s. And my cousin gave his life to Jesus and just inherited a house in Wrocław. And we're looking for a church or a mission to use this for the kingdom of God. And everybody's telling us about news. And my wife says, what bitch house is it? And she goes, it's this house. So what would you crane for? You see, it is. So we felt challenged by God. And I don't have time to tell you the whole story, but we felt very challenged by God that we needed to buy this house and turn it into a mission center, which is what we have done. And we've just spent a year and a half fundraising, something beyond anything we've ever done as a bishop before, and renovating this place to become a mission center. We want it to look like this, full of young people every weekend coming. We already have a lot going on in the city, so now having a venue, I think, will make that more interesting. Running Bible studies for the non-village. This is already inside the house. And I'll end just sharing this video about the house, partly because it just shares a little bit more the heart of a missionary movement to reach the secular culture and to reach this generation, but also because I'd love you guys to pray for this, because I feel a connection. Breslau was part of Germany. This house was built by German architects. It's a great, well-built house. And it's now going to be used to reach a generation for Jesus and to raise up new missionaries. And I think there's something beautiful about that. In Poland, we'd have a German house that is being used in this way. So pray that God would use this and pray for all the vibes we still need to come in. And here you go.
The world desperately needs bold followers of Jesus, fully committed, all in, who refuse to stand by while their generation goes unreached. God has put a vision on our hearts to train and send 1,000 young missional leaders to reach this generation for Jesus. And as part of this vision, Steiger is launching a new European missional hub. This will be a radical Jesus community, a dynamic action center that disrupts the city and boldly shows this generation that they can encounter God.
In the heart of Wrocław, Poland, one of Europe's key university cities, we will welcome international teams, Steiger Catalysts and missionaries in training. They will join the frontline work of boldly and relevantly preaching Jesus through artistic events, creative actions, relationships, and Bible studies for the non-religious. Dome means home, a home for the lost and broken. Like the father in the story of prodigal son, we see Jesus welcoming and transforming hundreds of people in this place. We are transforming this unique building into a community house, a culture center, and a mission hub.
A meeting place for influencers, artists, entrepreneurs, students, and cultural pioneers. A place where young people who wouldn't usually walk into a church can find Jesus. We believe God will make this a mission-sending hub to bless Europe and the world as we train and send out a new missionary movement for our time. We ask for your prayers, your support to make this happen, and we invite you to join us in the action.